We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome into the RotoWire NFL podcast. This is our sort of emergency final one here with about 48 hours to go until the draft officially gets underway. And some of the craziness, Mario, has already gotten started here as of Tuesday afternoon. We saw some movement, namely or specifically Frank Clark, a franchise tagged player, I believe, by the Seahawks, was going to be, obviously he's had a very productive start to his career, on the move. Now he's going to the Chiefs. What are the exact specifics of that deal?
Well, it looks like the Chiefs are giving up their 29th overall pick for this year, second rounder for 2020, and then the two teams are swapping their respective third rounders for this year, which I believe moves up the Chiefs 8 spots, so whatever. But that's in the bigger picture for Kansas City, that's basically kind of like trading Dee Ford and basically the second round pick that they got for the 49ers being a potential, I don't remember if that was 2020 or 2019 actually, but in any case, it's like they had Dee Ford, they had Justin Houston who they cut. Dee Ford was also a free agent who they just kind of like tagged as a formality, traded him to the 49ers. And so they're basically like trading Ford, the 29th pick, for the opportunity to extend Frank Clark as a free agent. And so that's going to be a really expensive contract, $20 million plus probably. It's one of those things where I don't think anybody disputes that Clark is a really, really talented player. He's much better than Dee Ford, I think. I don't think Ford is particularly good, but it's like I mentioned him earlier because it's not just that. They also cut Houston, who I think can still play. But they gave up a lot of money for the opportunity to basically like sign a free agent, which is kind of dumb. Like, you want to trade draft pick assets for kind of just another solid asset that you don't have to like invest more into. It's just not very good use of resources. And if Pat Mahomes has another season vaguely, and like last year, I mean, just 35 touchdowns, like he's going to regress a lot because like Sammy Watkins is bad foot. Kelsey's coming back from an ankle surgery. Who knows what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill. And that's the other thing that's kind of weird about this trade from Kansas City's point of view is, there's not one solid account on what happened with Frank Clark and his domestic violence issue, but like, did he not get kicked off the Michigan team for it? I thought he did.
No, I don't think he
did. Oh, he didn't? Okay. No. In any case, like, it was a bad thing that was, if the details are to be, you know, believed. And it's a weird thing to invite when you're the team that just cut Kareem Hunt. And, you know, you got this thing with Tyreek Hill, and who knows where that's going. So it's a weird thing to do from that PR angle, and then also just kind of like, why not just sign a free agent defensive end next time? Like, why not instead of trading a first and a second round pick for the opportunity to give a contract to Frank Clark, why not just sign like Preston Smith or something like that and draft another good player? I don't know. Another two good players potentially.
Yeah, because looking at the exact figures now, they're paying so much in draft capital to kind of overpay Frank Clark potentially. I mean, we're talking about a contract here, according to Adam Schefter of ESPN, agreement on a 5-year, $105.5 million contract. So that's more than DeMarcus Lawrence with $63.5
million. Yeah, I don't think he's better than Lawrence. I think Lawrence is the better player. But yeah,
there's the political things that you mentioned too.
Right, and Frank Clark was actually dismissed from the Michigan program for that. So it's like, whatever, they might have done that like without listening to the details as like a preemptive damage control thing, but like Michigan, a team that, you know, always wants to compete, Frank Clark, a very talented player at one of the most important positions, and they said like, get out. So it's a weird situation for them to wade into is all. And as much as, you know, Seattle does have that Russell Wilson contract, which makes it harder to sign. I forgot to complete my last point. Sorry. If Mahomes has a season vaguely like last year, he's going to hold out if they don't extend him, I bet, because why? I mean, he should be getting paid like $30 million a year right now. And I don't know what his rookie contract is, but it's not that.
Right.
So they're going to be in that same situation as Seattle potentially as soon as next year. And Seattle, I think, smartly said like, oh, well, we don't want to be in that situation. So does anyone want to give us a first and second round pick for this guy we can't really keep anyway? And I mean, they would have kept him, but it would have been a contentious thing, like repeatedly tagging him basically indefinitely. So it seems to me like an error on Kansas City's part, short-sighted at best, because yes, Frank Clark will be very good, but the sum from last year won't necessarily be any better. Like what Ford and Houston did might not necessarily be matched by Ogba and Frank Clark this year, despite paying a lot more for the second case.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking off air this morning just about this Kansas City team as a whole, and you know, you touched on it right there. It does kind of feel like they're walking on thin ice a little
bit. Oh, yeah.
with this roster, and for them to give up that level of draft capital, especially when there's something that I felt was like one of the most glaring needs that they had, was something that they were very much at pick 29 in position to address. And that's the cornerback position, where, you know, even if Greedy Williams was off the board or DeAndre Baker, they still could have had their pick of, you know, one of Baker, Byron Murphy, Rakia Sin from Temple. A couple other guys have kind of entered the mix as people's pet favorites at the cornerback spot. But either way, they could have gotten one of the three, four, maybe even five best cornerbacks in this class. Now they're out of that, and obviously we saw that being a huge deficiency on their defense. It kind of ended up costing them the AFC Championship game last year, and now they don't really get to do a whole lot about it.
They appear to be banking on Bashaud Breeland and Kendall Fuller, and I don't know, it might work. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like their template from last year was pretty simply, like, have Mahomes be impossible to stop. And when you give him Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, he is indeed impossible to stop. But if Tyreek Hill is not out there, that's a very different question. If Sammy Watkins even isn't out there, we saw that complicate things when he wasn't playing last year. If Kelce has any sort of complications with this ankle surgery, like the whole thing can turn to crap just right there, because then it turns out like, oh, right, what is Frank Clark worth? What is the difference between a bad pass rush and a decent one when the offense isn't good enough to capitalize anyway? So I feel like they really should have stayed in the first round, taken whichever, like they didn't need any particular type of receiver. It's just like anybody good who can run routes in a three receiver set. So, you know, be it AJ Brown, you know, whoever at the late first range, N'Keal Harry, something like that. I feel like they would have been a easily overlooked, perhaps, but still very worthwhile insurance for the whole blueprint that they showed last year. And now I think they're putting themselves at very serious risk of just having the blueprint implode. So it could work, but like you said, it's like they're at best, they've given themselves like a very thin margin of error.
Yeah, so it does really appear that way. Shifting gears here, you just touched on what would have made sense for the Chiefs at 29. You released a mock draft over the weekend, your mock draft for this season. So the first five that you have coming off the board: Kyler Murray, Nick Bosa to the 49ers, New York Jets taking Ed Oliver, Oakland getting Quinnen Williams, and Tampa Bay going ahead and getting Josh Allen out of Kentucky. Do you still feel that way as of Tuesday, 2 days before the draft, that's a top five that's probably going to shake out that way?
I don't really feel strongly about the third pick, or even the fourth necessarily, definitely not the fifth. With Tampa Bay, I understand that Devin White, that is the LSU one, right? Then Bush is Michigan. Okay. So I know Devin White is the consensus projection there, but they have Levante David already, and they got somebody else, I can't remember, who's just like a kind of decent stopgap inside linebacker. But then for outside linebacker, it's not really clear what they're going to do. Like Jason Pierre-Paul, maybe Noah Spence will be the edge rushers when it's nickel. But 3-4 is what Todd Bowles runs. It's what Bruce Arians ran when he was in Arizona, and Bowles was his defensive coordinator. So Pierre-Paul's probably not, at least at this stage of his career, a guy you have standing up outside in a 3-4 base. Spence could be able to. He's certainly small enough to project there, but they don't have a real edge rusher. And, you know, you can, I think, see maybe it's Deion Buchanan. That's who they signed. So why? That seems weird to me. I guess I'm still a Deion Buchanan truther. I think he's good. I think Steve Wilks is the problem from last year, because no one was complaining about Deion Buchanan when it was James Betcher running the defense or Todd Bowles running the defense under Arians. So if they're running a 3-4, even if they're running a 3-4, they have Levante David, Deion Buchanan on the inside. On the outside, not as much. Shaquille Barrett's okay. Like he gave some snaps for Denver at least the past couple of years. Otherwise, they don't have anything. It's maybe Pierre-Paul, but I can imagine it being more like he just doesn't play in the base formation. He only plays in nickel, still gets to like 700 snaps, something like that, or you know, maybe 100 snaps as a true outside linebacker. I don't know. But on the other side, it's Noah Spence or nothing, or Barrett. And it's, I don't know, Allen isn't exactly like some mega prospect or something, but he had pretty convincing production at Kentucky, and the workout numbers were really good too. So 3-4s don't work if you can't rush the edge, and I don't know if they can do that without someone like Josh Allen.
Yeah, as it, like you said, I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And it, you know, especially when this whole draft season, everyone is, and myself included, was guilty of this, just kind of projecting that they're going, you know, with Quan Alexander leaving and was it free agency? That it just made so much sense to get a guy like Devin White. And especially,
and it still does. He's really good, but it's just like pass rush is more important than inside off-ball linebackers.
Yes, no, that's definitely true. And Allen, I think, is the best one of that specific position in this draft. I just think if posed with that, I think Allen is a definite possibility, maybe more likely to go to Tampa Bay than a Devin White is. But I think a lot of people believe that Allen is off the board by the time that the Buccaneers are picking at five.
That could happen. I alluded to not feeling strongly about the third pick, and I guess it's because one of the more open secrets about the draft right now is that the Jets are trying to trade down. I don't know who would trade up necessarily there, because if it's not Tampa gunning for Josh Allen, then it's not Josh Allen at the third pick. I don't know if there's anyone who would specifically trade up for Ed Oliver, as much as I think he totally is worth trading up for. So I don't know if the Jets will have that option, or it might be one of those things where they have to settle for trading all the way back to like the 10th pick and only getting like a third or something like that. Whereas they're more so thinking like we might get another first round pick next year. And I don't know if there's a market for anything like that.
It's going to be tough to move down in this top five, I think.
Yeah. So they're trying to I don't know whether there's going to be much of a market for it. And if they're staying put, then to me, Oliver is the obvious choice. But it's hard to read into the weird culture war things that the NFL is factoring into the Ed Oliver market, because, I mean, with the McGinn quotes that leaked the other day about, you know, the ridiculous fogey scouts who give anonymous quotes to McGinn for the past 20 years or whatever. They're just like, they're mad that he's a trash talker, apparently, which I don't believe. That's something that a scout says when they're trying to reinforce a conclusion that they started with. They're starting with the conclusion like, I don't like Ed Oliver. He doesn't do what he's told. He's insubordinate. And along with that, let's see. He doesn't wear matching socks. He is into anime. He doesn't listen to his coaches. And then it's like, ah, that's the part you care about. You're mad that he showed up Major Applewhite for being a total doofus at Houston. Like, these people just follow some, you know, some doctrine of just like hierarchical subordination. And Ed Oliver was like, oh, no, I don't need you, Major Applewhite. I don't need Houston even. Like, I'm an NFL player. No, you guys really don't scare me.
He could have sat out this whole last year and been in the same spot.
It's like he was NFL ready pretty much coming out of high school, and he still is a monstrous talent. And, like, I think it's only because of, as the scout alluded to, as the scout said at the very end, his real agenda was that he didn't think that Oliver would be loyal to any team that drafted him, which loyalty you can read as code for, again, subordination. So it's ridiculous, petty, you know, caste system thinking that these entitled reactionary morons care about more than, like, actually having good football teams. So that's the part that complicates the Oliver thing. Like, if it weren't for that, I'm not even convinced that Bosa's better. I know they do different things, but I just think Oliver is very clearly one of the best prospects in, like, the past 10 years.
Yeah, he's a total game wrecker, and, you know, he's got an interesting frame. Obviously, you're not going to stick him, like, right, like, playing, like, the zero technique or anything like that, but, you know, if you move him between the guard and the tackle and just let him go to work, like, he can be an absolute stud. So I really like him. I think that at three, he makes some sense. I still would imagine that Quinnen Williams is higher.
He's really, really good, yeah.
But I think either way you slice it, like, both those guys are going to be longtime producers, in my opinion.
Yeah, Quinnen Williams looks, excuse me, really, really good also. Like, it could very easily be an Ndamukong Hong Su, Gerald McCoy situation between Oliver and Williams, not to call them perfectly, you know, analogous comparisons there. But those are the kinds of NFL impacts I expect from those two players.
And then Josh Allen gets to be Aaron Curry.
Oh no. Well, he was a 4-3 outside guy, so hopefully that is not his fate, but Tampa,
one of these guys is gonna miss, though.
Yeah, odds are, but I don't think it's, I feel very confident it won't be Bosa, Oliver, Williams, but it's like, that doesn't, I don't want to use, like, the process of elimination to be like, I guess Josh Allen's cursed then as a result. Sorry, Josh.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's always, you know, a crapshoot with this stuff, but I just don't think it's the case for Bosa, Oliver, Williams. I think they're guys in weaker classes that could have gone first overall, and no one at that time would have been, you know, raising any sort of objection.
Zooming out just a second, just to touch on Alabama here, because they've obviously been churning out first round defensive line talents for, you know, at least the last decade, ever, you know, pretty much since Saban really got the machine.
Just put a hyphen question mark. It's all the way.
Yeah. Back to the 08-09. But, like, do you feel like Williams, I mean, he projects to go the highest among these Alabama defensive linemen that have come out in recent years. Do you really feel like he's the best of them, though? I mean, like, we're talking like Jonathan Allen and so on.
Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne, I think, had a really good rookie year for Washington last year. I feel like by just prospect profile terms, he has to be ahead of those guys, as much as, like, now that we know that Allen and Payne, and I'm probably forgetting somebody.
Sean Hand, yeah. Sean Robinson.
Like, now that we know a few of those guys are really good, there's the argument to make, well, you take now the sure thing. But if you're going back, if you're removing any sort of hindsight from it, then I think Quinnen Williams is kind of in his own category, even amongst those guys. And that's not meant to slight. Allen fell a little bit because he had some kind of medical issue or something.
Shoulder, maybe?
So, yeah, he was supposed to be like a top five kind of guy, but I don't know. I feel like Williams, who had very good athletic testing and is very young and accomplished for his age, he easily stood out on a team that was similarly talented or as much or more talented as what the other guys were on. And so it's like when you're playing among the best and you're not as old as everybody around you and you still immediately stand out from the rest of them, then you also test very well like he did. I think it's one of those things where it's no slight to the other guys, but they didn't have as much going for them when they came out as he does.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the way you put that definitely makes sense. So moving outside the top five now, I really can't make a good judgment on what the Giants are going to do at number six because I'm feeling less and less confident, and it's reflected also in your mock, but it feels all the more likely now that Dwayne Haskins is not going to be a Giant, at least at number six. But I don't really love the offensive linemen that are going to be available at six, which is all of them, any of them, you name it. You have Jonah Williams going. I think that makes some sense. I think Juwan Taylor, he might have bust written all over him, actually.
People like him a lot, and I don't claim to know anything about offensive linemen, but with Jonah Williams, he was a freshman starter, I believe, on that team.
Yep.
I know he had the short arms, but it's like he tested fine otherwise, and the short arm thing
it looked bad to me on film, though, like on occasion.
Oh, okay.
With the arms, like where he's not able to reach out and engage an oncoming rusher, and a guy will just kind of like swat his arms down and like is suddenly past him. So
that sounds more, not to diminish it could still be a problem, the short arms, but that kind of sounds to me a little bit more like a hands issue, but without a... meaning to claim that I know anything about it all that much. I tend to try to like outsource certain questions to certain, like, I don't know what the term is, like heuristics or something. And it's like, it's kind of similar logic to Quinnen Williams, where I'm just thinking Alabama always has the best offensive line. Jonah Williams started for them and was like one of their best players on it as a true freshman. It's like the arms are probably a limitation of some kind, but I feel like he's laid out enough data in front of us that indicates he can overcome it. In any case, with the Giants, he would be a right tackle because they still have Nate Solder. And maybe I just had the wrong line of thinking. Maybe offensive line is not something that would interest the Giants there, even if they aren't taking Daniel Jones at six. But I feel strongly that they won't take Daniel Jones at six. I think it's just one of those things, like, you can't convince me that reality is that stupid. Like, if it happens, I'm going into, like, serious dissociation scenario, something like that. But I think that maybe, like, Devin White would have been a better pick than Jonah Williams there. Because, like, I felt weird having White fall to seven. Like, I feel like he looks like a really insanely good linebacker prospect. Like, as much as that's a... diminished value position nowadays, I feel like he could be an exception. Like he could be like a Levante David kind of guy.
He's better than Ogletree right now.
Oh, for sure. James Betcher is a really good defensive coordinator, and the reasoning I used to go with Jonah Williams instead was that they're gonna take Daniel Jones later, which maybe not even that. Maybe they're actually in on Drew Lock or even Will Greer, and David Gettleman just thinks he's doing like Professor Chaos pranks on us. Like he thinks that he's like doing some sort of like evil genius great feat, and it's just like, haha, I took Will Greer actually. I made a different bad quarterback pick, fooled you all.
This Easter egg is filled with mayonnaise instead of chocolate.
Yeah, I think those are the kind of Easter eggs he prefers also. Like, that's just kind of that he's just got good taste like that. But in any case, the reasoning that I was kind of using was like, well, if they are taking a quarterback, maybe they double down on ensuring their success by trying to give them like a flawless offensive line or something like that. But if you gave James Betcher Devin White, he would make him an all pro within like a couple of years, I bet.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. But I feel like the Giants are probably going to go offensive line at six.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
As long as they keep that pick, again, like, I don't love any of the offensive line prospects there, but it does make sense to an extent. Certainly, I think for them, probably right now, more so than Devin White, but we'll have to see. But I think the Giants are just kind of like what we were saying with the Jets, although the Jets are in a better position picking it, you know, picking third rather than six. But again, it's going to be tough to trade down out of this top 10. I just don't think that many people are going to be like jumping at the bit to trade up, other than maybe like the Raiders or somebody if they wanted to get crazy and trade into the number one pick for Kyler Murray. I just have a hard time seeing any of these teams picking inside the top 10 being able to convince teams picking outside of the top 10 to like, hey, give us a bunch of draft capital for a guy that you probably could get if you stayed put anyway.
Yeah, I don't say this with any particular evidence, but I feel like particularly in the top 10, if you're talking trade up, and especially if you're like a team in the top half of the round anyway, if you're talking trade up, that's either you're chasing a quarterback or you're thinking win now in some form. And it's like, if you were bad last year, why would you be thinking that way necessarily? Like that might be a little, you might be succumbing to hubris a bit there.
It'd be like the Packers maybe, or the only team, or like,
I guess so.
Yeah. The Packers would fit one of those bill. Obviously they already have Aaron Rodgers, but like,
and maybe the Jags or something, but it would specifically be one of those defensive tackles or Bosa that you would trade up for. Like, no one's trading up for a quarterback because Kyler Murray's going first. Whatever stuff we hear to the contrary is just Keim like trying desperately to, make people forget, bring home a little treat, you know, like lay a dead mouse in front of you like a cat and hoping that you don't remember that it puked on the carpet yesterday. But I feel like that's like the only thing going on with Murray there. So I don't think that pick is truly on the market at all. It's just Josh Rosen that's on the market. But yeah, so it's, if you're not trading up for one of those three defensive linemen, which I don't think the Jags would based on their current roster construction, like it seems like they need maybe offensive line and a new vice president of operations, something like that. And those aren't available in the draft. So I actually had them stopping Devin White's slide and also kind of predicting that they would trade Telvin Smith, who Tom Coughlin threw a temper tantrum about the other day for not being at voluntary workouts. He thinks it means the opposite word of
mandatory.
Yeah, exactly. So he's confused about that, and that's okay. He's only in charge of the whole team, so just let him do whatever he wants.
That old team,
you got to send a message. You got to keep these players in line. So trade your best one for like a fifth round pick and draft a rookie at the same position, so you can maybe like make a lateral move in a year.
I have nothing to add to that. That was pretty much perfect. Moving forward,
everyone's low on Greedy, but how can you not take Greedy Williams?
And he's a cornerback from LSU.
If his name was Jim or something, I'd be like, yeah, fine, who cares? But his name is Greedy Williams. And to be serious, I actually feel like he's a good candidate to get some inflation in the draft, because as much as people have a bunch of these corners that they like, they're all like late first and then like second and third round guys who are like DeAndre Baker, Rocky Asin, who it's like you can find reasons to like them, but their workout metrics do not merit like a selection in the first 20, 25 picks or so.
Same with Byron Murphy.
Right. I think in his case, you can kind of rationalize it, because if I remember right, he's pretty young. Like, I don't think he turns 21 for a while yet. But yeah, in the case of Yasin,
still though, I mean the frame's small, the eighth percentile arm length, and you know a 40 at a 4.55. I mean, I'm sure maybe he can sprout into a little bit more speed than that. But I don't know. I got my Murphy concern.
Right. He would, if he works in the NFL, he'll have to be kind of like a pouncing kind of playmaking corner rather than like a shutdown coverage guy. Like, Marcus Peters is very different build and everything, but it would be that kind of player, I think, where he's not going to run with a top five receiver single coverage with no help, but he might intercept six passes and like basically win you some games by just stopping a comeback drive, something like that. In any case, I agree. Like, I have him down at 25 or something, and Greedy's the only one who has above average arm length, and he has the 4.37 speed. Had some really good results at LSU, like did really well against the Mississippi guys, specifically Metcalf.
Yep.
So the NFL, on defense, as much as you like to have a great run defense, it's more important to rush the passer and have productive coverage. And Greedy Williams is the only guy, I think, who has like the potential to be the cornerback one on some team. I know that Detroit has Darius Slay. I still gave them Greedy Williams because they don't have that many needs on that team, especially with the...
Yeah, they were tough to mock.
Yeah, I've seen people projecting offensive line, and I don't really understand. I know that the metrics kind of took a turn south toward the second half of the year, but at least early on, they were just blasting huge rushing lanes open constantly for Kerryon Johnson, and he was taking full advantage of them. And it was Ragnow that they got last year. They yes. have they have Taylor Decker, who's awesome at left tackle. Can't remember the other. Glasgow should be fine. He's like in his third or fourth year out of Michigan, and he was a totally decent prospect. So
you know, there's like 17 Glasnows or something.
Yeah, it's you know, he's they just switch out for very.
It's
they,
wild, man.
They're gonna have like great longevity from just one. They only play like four games a year. Like they just keep switching out and reporting for duty. But anyway, I don't know if the Detroit really needs an offensive lineman there. I guess if they did, it would be either Jonah Williams or Juwan. What is his name again?
Juwan Taylor.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of Juwan Taylor. I didn't really get the big deal. I know that left tackle Ivy looked terrible when I was watching, but
oh yeah.
With Taylor, I guess it's one of those things. There's quite a bit of projection. Like they're banking on that he's just kind of naturally talented, and he is young. So that there's something to be said for that. Like if you have the tools and you're raw and you're also young, and it's like, well, maybe in a year he won't be raw anymore, and then you just got this guy who's got tools and skills now, and maybe that's what's going to happen with him. But yeah, in any case, it would be those two, I think, at eight if that was Detroit's interest there. But I don't know. They don't have that many needs, and they're going to like a constricting offense with Bavel going there. So I don't think it's on offense generally where they have needs. It's like the defense needs to get better to clamp down on the lessened ambitions of the offense, in response to the lessened ambitions of the offense.
Looking at Mike Clay, you know, it's not an exact science here, but he's got pretty good sort of position unit rankings, and he's got, and it's color coded, so it's easy for me to read right here, which is great.
Love colors.
Me too.
Give
man.
Me colors.
And when they're darker, it means one thing or the other, but, with the Lions, it looks like linebacker is still a bit of a concern. I know they used a fairly high draft pick on their...
Jared Davis hasn't turned into anything.
Nope, which I...
Yeah, they had a bunch of snaps last year to Devin Kennard, who basically did nothing, and then, like, Christian Jones, I want to say. So, yeah, maybe at eight, I mean, if Devin White was there, yeah, that would be pretty compelling. Yes. And even Devin Bush, I didn't have him in my mock until 20 to Pittsburgh, but... It's so funny how similar those guys' prospect profiles are. It's like, wow, 4.43, 4.43. They're both relatively short, and they both have like top 95 percentile three cones by cornerback standards. And it's really funny how it's, you know, the Devin dovetailing as well. So yeah, it's those guys are very similar, I think. I guess White's production was much more voluminous, so you can put him ahead. And was LSU's defense better than Michigan's the past couple of years?
Ooh, that's kind of up for debate, really.
I guess so.
I think Michigan, I think by like the metrics, like Bill Connolly's S&P, he pretty firmly had Michigan as like the best defense for most of the season. Then it got completely exposed. I think there's like, this is a bit far afield for me, but there's some interesting conversation going on, X and O stuff, about the stuff that Don Brown runs at Michigan and like the ways that it can be beaten. And we saw it in the Ohio State game, and we saw it big time when Haskins just dropped like 60 points on them. But to the larger point, I do think that Devin White marginally better than Devin Bush, but both very good, very similar.
So yeah, I think Bush is totally in play for a top 10 pick, especially if White goes to Tampa, or if, you know, if for whatever reason White is off the board in the top five, then I think that would be really good news for Bush, of course.
Yeah. So Bush, like by virtue of White going, you know, somewhere top seven, top eight, like there are a bunch of teams that are going to be looking to get him. And I think, you know, if he falls to 20, that's something that'd be interesting. But I really think that 15 would be his like kind of bottom floor.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, I projected a trade that I don't know what sort of thing to expect with Josh Rosen exactly. So 15, I kind of made a a fake market. I guess market.
The Redskins wouldn't want to pick him, but
well, in any case, they might be looking to trade up, I guess. And I get like I can't remember who it was. Apologies to whoever it is, but I saw somebody on Twitter mentioning that the Jets might be trading with Washington, or like Washington might be one of the main candidates to move up. I don't know why. Like, as much as I really like Haskins, I don't feel like going from 15 to 3 to take Haskins would be necessarily a better move than just kind of... I don't think it would take that much to get Rosen, because it is not an option for them to keep him on the team. If they keep him on the team, they're just going to give him away to the highest bidder, whatever the highest bid is. So I don't think if people are like looking for a particular like precedent in the past for what they can get for Rosen, that it necessarily bears anything and bears any merit in this case, they could get Rosen for surprisingly cheap. And as much as I like Haskins, I would probably rank Rosen ahead of them as a prospect profile kind of thing. And I know the lost year on the contract isn't good, but they could, in the projection that I gave for this trade, it was basically Arizona trades Josh Rosen and their second round pick in order to move up to 15 and get another third rounder from Washington this year. So not nearly as much as they would hope for, but they can like Keim can call it a win, because it's like, I got a first round pick for him, even though he actually just traded up 17 spots, basically. So that's what I project there. But yeah, if it's the Jets, I guess they're already looking to move Darren Lee, so they wouldn't really be looking for an inside linebacker. I don't know. In any case, I agree with you that Bush is like one of those guys who seems too good to fall where I have him going. And yeah, the only defense that I really have for that is it's just like maybe something weird will happen. I don't think it makes much sense either. I couldn't really, you know, figure out a better way. It was like 18 Minnesota should have took him, but it's like they got $1 billion on Anthony Barr for some reason, and then Eric Kendricks is there already, so they can't take him. Maybe the Giants just don't take a quarterback and he goes 17, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you laid out some of the reason behind why Bush might fall. I mean, again, in today's NFL, having a productive pass rush and pass coverage are kind of, you know.
And he's 5'11", and teams can be weird about that stuff. Like, I'm trying to remember the last 5'11 guy who went really high. Like, back in the day, if you were 5'11", like, you just were not going in the first two rounds.
I mean, that's, like, why Ray Lewis went in the 20s.
Yeah, and he was, I think, wasn't he 6 foot or something? Anyway.
Maybe they goosed that.
I don't know. But he was, I'm sure, similarly terrifying at Maryland, was it?
Ray Lewis?
Miami, right. Oh, crap. His son was at Miami, for Maryland for a bit.
Yep, a brief stint as a Utah State Aggie as well, I think.
Right, correct, yeah. Anyway, see all this great trivia you guys learn on this podcast, and you can't imagine it now, but it's going to save your life someday.
It's the only mock draft on the internet.
Yeah, well, our podcast stuff, like Ray Lewis's son, believe it or not, was at Utah State first, and you, like, no one else at the bar is going to know that. You will. Don't thank us. You don't need to. It's nothing. But to go back a little bit, at 9, I had Buffalo take Rashawn Gary, because I feel like it just seems like something Brandon Bean would do. Like, he likes the toolsy players, or at least I don't know how else to explain thinking Josh Allen is good. But anyway, Rashawn Gary's gonna go somewhere. His workout numbers are insane, and it's I don't really blame anybody for projecting growth with him as much as I would probably pass at that point. Dwayne Haskins added going to Denver. That's kind of, to be honest, just me using like tournament strategy, because it's like it just as it's ridiculous how thick Gettleman and the Giants have laid it on with Daniel Jones. It's like John Elway has basically walked around in public with a Drew Lock custom Denver Broncos jersey the past 2 months.
Hell yeah.
And that would be a weird thing to do being way back at the 10th pick. It's like it'd be totally easy for somebody, and maybe somebody will trade ahead of the Broncos and take Drew Lock for that reason. But I have him taking Dwayne Haskins over Lock. Why not? I don't know. Weird thing, by the way, I don't remember the guy's name, but I've probably like New York Star Ledger, NJ.com of whatever sort, writer published today or yesterday a conversation with Dwayne Haskins.
I read that. Very bizarre.
Yeah, it's weird. I get how it's certainly worth noting because the NFL will penalize a player for that. I don't think that it's necessarily legitimate because the guy's crazy. Dwayne Haskins' father is nuts. If you read the transcript, it doesn't sound like he's particularly lucid.
He said the word core values about like 80 times.
It sounds
imagined to be like a 3-minute conversation, but he never said what they were.
Yeah, it looks like a senile person talking if you look at the transcript. And that doesn't mean Dwayne Haskins listens to him. It's just Dwayne Haskins is, what, 20, 21? He probably doesn't want to talk to reporters. He probably thinks it's tedious and boring, and he doesn't understand why anyone cares. Like, he's just kind of like, leave me alone. Or,
and especially at this stage, it's like, close the doors. Like, leave, get away from me. Like, just let me have this for the next 2 days until it's draft time.
Yeah, it's for all we know to Dwayne Haskins, his father coming up to him and saying, you got to let me talk to every reporter. That might sound to Dwayne Haskins like, listen up, I take out the garbage in this house. I clean the bed and stuff. Like, that's... Oh,
it's okay, Dad.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, you, all right, sure. I won't stop you. Like, it doesn't... They assume that because there's this guy, whoever, whatever his name is, of his dad is, they assume, like, oh, Dwayne Haskins gets put in a kennel. His dad keeps him in there in between games and tells him what to think, and they compared it to Eli Apple and his mom or whatever. And it's like, well, how did that work out for the Giants exactly? Did the Saints not get very good play out of Eli Apple? Was there a single problem when he got to New Orleans? Or was it that the Giants front office is what we're talking about again, aren't we? And Dave Gettleman is a goofy, you know, he's not like a crank necessarily like Tom Coughlin, but he's a goofy, petty narcissist. He's got a hubris issue, thinking that because he feels fondly toward Eli Manning, that makes Eli Manning good. Like, that's the kind of stuff that Gettleman thinks, and so he's almost like using divine right of kings logic and like looking at his station as the GM of some team and thinking like, anybody who gives me any hassle at all is just a bad person. That's just the rules. And, you know, Eli Apple wasn't necessarily a problem on the field or off, and his mother or whoever, for however annoying they might have been, it didn't bear out in any sort of result. Or were we crazy and did the Saints actually get torched in coverage constantly after trading for Apple? Because it seemed like it was the other way around. They were getting torched, they traded for him, and then they couldn't get thrown on again, really.
Yep.
So I don't know, the Eli Apple case, all this stuff is complicated. And it's like, you can't penalize a player for a goofy parent generally, or else the Cowboys wouldn't have drafted Tyron Smith. Yeah, like, his family situation
This isn't a problem that just like started happening over the last 3 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah, it's Dwayne Haskins is not the only player who's got like an insane family member or like some kind of goofy patriarch that he doesn't feel like quarreling with.
The top of the board, man. I mean, I think Kyler Murray's dad.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Too.
Right. Yeah. There's all kinds of weird psychoanalysis speculation you could do on players and their families. And it's like, Dwayne Haskins has had no problems. Like, this isn't I don't know. It's a goofy thing to look into. And I, as much as the reporter, I understand him disclosing that, because it is worth noting in the sense that the NFL tends to penalize players who have situations like that, especially if it's just like, we don't care what you tell us, like, we're going to do what we want to kind of thing. Who can forget the Manning family just said, we're not going to play for the Chargers. Like, that's valiant behavior in contrast for some reason.
Sure.
But yeah, anyway, it's crap. And even the article as it was published, you could tell it was just like, this guy didn't talk to me. Like, he didn't, you know, respect me in my position as a reporter, and I'm, you know, who does he think he is? And it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, your feelings got hurt, that sucks, whatever. But it's only noteworthy in the sense that it's like, keep in mind, NFL teams might penalize him for this. Like, the article went to like a great length to like imply that it was like, this guy's bad dude, and like, man, Dwayne Haskins is probably just gonna be like controlled by him forever. And it's like, you don't need to make those implications. Just say like, yeah, dude's dad's pretty weird, some coaches might not think so fondly of him. Like, that's all you really need to do with that information. In any case,
so that means the Bengals are all about him then.
I don't know, they like more like overt criminals, I think.
Oh, that's true.
Dwayne Haskins has done nothing wrong. But yeah, I feel like he's pretty clearly the second best quarterback in the draft. And I shouldn't like be this optimistic, but I really honestly don't think the Giants have Daniel Jones ranked ahead of him. I think it's, even if they do have Daniel Jones ranked as their first quarterback, it's because they just like punted implicitly on the question of who the best one is, and instead are like, well, we're going to take one later. Like, we're not going to be in the Haskins market, something like that. Because if you really think that Daniel Jones or, yeah, screw it, even Drew Lock, if you think they're as good as Haskins, I think you're just not looking at the picture, honestly.
Yep.
So I would think it would be pretty reasonable for John Elway to get sold on Dwayne Haskins. I think it'd be a really good move. I think it, for the same reasons we talked about the last podcast, why it would be good for Locke, I think it'd be good for Haskins, because I think Fangio is going to put forth a really good defense. The mile high factor gives them a goofy home field advantage. I think it would be a nice low pressure scenario for a quarterback, because obviously Flacco's starting this year. So I think it would make a lot of sense. And their roster has surprisingly few like actionable needs. Like, there's things that they need, but not necessarily things that they're in a position to acquire anyway. So it's like, why not take a quarterback, even if you're putting him on the bench for a year?
And there are certain strengths to Haskins' game that are, you know, in line with what Flacco has. So they wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel if Flacco goes out at a certain point this year. Like,
they're similar players.
Haskins can push the ball down the field as well as current day Joe Flacco, I would think.
Yeah, and Flacco like might be more athletic than Haskins. Like, it's totally a pocket passer transition. And so, yeah, I think Haskins would make a lot of sense at 10. Locke would still make a lot of sense for the Broncos. But I went a little tournament logic there, and I think the Bengals are assuming in any case that Denver will take Locke if Haskins goes 10. I don't know I don't know if they know what they would do. I have them taking Drew Locke just because, like, I don't know. I don't have a problem with Locke as like a top 15 pick. I wouldn't want to make that selection myself, but there's only so much we can know about quarterbacks. I'm certainly wrong about them plenty. So just because I'm not gravitating toward Locke is not grounds for me to like write them off.
So do you feel fairly confident, though, you know, Locke or otherwise, that the Bengals do go quarterback at 11?
I think it would make a lot of sense if it's Locke or Haskins. I know that Will Grier put up big numbers, and he was a totally high recruit at Florida before that. It's not like he's some Big 12 trash or something, but I'm not convinced about him exactly. And with Locke, I feel like there's at least more tools that you can imagine skill set growth within. With Grier, I'm kind of just like, I don't know, he just looked like some quarterback who was good in college to me, and maybe he'll be good, but not because it's like you're something exceptional or anything like that. So I would be surprised if Grier was in that range. So if Locke and Haskins are not there for Cincinnati for whatever reason, I would think they would try to desperately trade back. But if not, I don't know what they would do.
Devin Bush, sorry. Duh.
Oh, yeah, him, Brian Burns, something like that. I don't know. But yeah, I think they want to take a quarterback because Andy Dalton sucks, and like the new regime is not attached to him.
That's true. How much longer does Dalton even have on his deal?
I don't know. I just kind of, you know, put him in the mental
closet.
We're not
too far away.
Okay.
So he signed a 6-year deal before the 2014 season.
Okay, that's he's basically dispensable
probably
now.
Almost out of guaranteed money on that deal then.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up the overthecap.com entry, and the internet is always great here.
But super good.
But it's particularly
for a website.
Okay. Oh, there we go. Finally got in. And yeah, so they can cut him right now and there's no dead money. There would be $33 million and $34 million in savings over the next 2 years if they cut him.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty decent incentive then. If they have a quarterback that they like at 11, then yeah, I could totally see it now. I don't know why I thought that Dalton was like somehow like locked in to be,
well, the big reported number, you know, with those contracts and not like the real non-funny money version of it. But they could take a quarterback and still keep Dalton and try to rehabilitate his value, and then, you know, trade him for like a 5th round pick or something to some team that considers Dalton stopgap or something. But I don't know. I feel like Cincinnati has basically needs pretty much anywhere other than defensive back. and maybe defensive line, they're pretty set. I don't know how much more work the offensive line could use, but Taylor would make some sense, I guess.
Yeah, because they re-signed Bobby Hart to a pretty big deal, right?
Ugh, that's bad.
And they traded for Cordy Glenn last year.
Right, I know they got him. Brian Price, they spent a first-round pick. Not Brian, Billy Price. They spent a first-round pick on at center. Don't know what's going on at the guard position, to be honest. And so, I don't know. Maybe they are kind of cornered into taking a quarterback there.
Yeah, it seems like it. But to your larger point also, I mean, other than cornerback, there are several red areas, according to Mike Clay, in terms of their positional needs. So they really could go several different directions here.
Does it list offensive line and, like, tight end?
His offensive line is one of the worst ones in the NFL, even with them having addressed some of that. Linebacker would be another one.
Yeah, linebacker, they're very thin. They only have Preston Brown, who didn't play much last year, and Nick Vigil, who gets hurt a lot, and some nobodies, really. So that defense could be pretty bad against the run this year, and, well, they'll be bad in a lot of respects.
Tight end listed, too.
But tight end, they have nothing. Basically, they have Uzoma, and they lost Croft. Oh, they re-signed Eifert, that's right.
Right, but, I mean, they know better than anybody that you can't rely on him.
I guess, I'm skeptical of this idea that the Iowa tight ends are going to be top 20 picks. I know that I'm in the minority on that, apparently, so maybe I should take that as a sign, like, I'm the one missing something, but it would basically take Locke and Haskins going before the 11th pick and maybe Cincinnati then taking Hawkinson, in my opinion, for those guys to get serious top 15 possibility. But that, I guess that's the way I would need to guess that it happens, if it happens.
All right, so let's start moving forward here. Let's start getting into maybe more position specifics. I want to get your opinion on where the first receiver is going to come off the board.
So I projected DK Metcalf to the Packers at 12, and that's one of those things where he could go earlier, he could go later. I don't know. I think it would make a lot of sense for the Packers to get Metcalf because that would just totally change the look of the offense immediately. And Devontae Adams is obviously a very, very good receiver, but he doesn't make the defense just flinch off the snap the way Metcalf would. And that's not to say Metcalf is going to be a better player at any point, and of course he's not as good now. I just mean, when you have that kind of size and speed on the field, it fundamentally changes the entire way a defense will approach you. And in ways that will help the other players. Like getting DK Metcalf is a way to amplify Devontae Adams, because it's like, if they really want to have a safety sit on him and risk the possibility of, like, the single high guy trying to run with Metcalf, it's like, fine.
It's not going to go.
You want to try that? Do it. Yeah, go ahead. Let's see what happens. And Rodgers, I still have all the faith in the world in. So I like the idea of jump-starting his career by adding a player like Metcalf. I think if they took a tight end at 12, it would be barely forgivable. Like, I would hate that so much. They don't get any immediate enough returns. The tight end position doesn't. That's generally huge. Yeah, and Rodgers, it's like, I know he's got maybe three or four years left, but, like, don't waste another one. You already wasted, like, 10 of them. Just stop doing that. Like, just stop wasting Aaron Rodgers' NFL seasons, please. So adding Metcalf is the kind of thing where, even if he only has, like, 700 yards as a rookie, I think it will open up a lot of big plays for other players too, because it's just, the seams are going to be a little looser. Like, it's going to add so much speed to an offense that's frankly very slow. There's not much speed on that field at all. It's like Marquez Valdes-Scantling is fast. That's it, and we don't even know how much he's going to play.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think going after someone that can make the immediate impact on the offense would be, you know, top of the need there for the Packers. I thought that Hawkinson made some sense in my mock, but I think that you also bring up a good point that it probably, you know, that's an egg that takes more than 1 year to hatch, basically.
Yeah, and I think Hawkinson is very good.
Sure.
I think he's probably like a top 20, top 25 pick to me. I question that there's like this desperate eagerness among the league to find the next big tight end. I think that's like, there's this little thing in the back of our collective football fan consciousness right now where we're kind of like idealizing players like George Kittle and Travis Kelce, when it's like, guys like that just never really happen. And I know Fant at least is similar athletically to Kittle, but I think there were very different players coming out. Even though he was a fifth round pick, I was higher on Kittle because I thought he should have been like a second and third rounder. And even then, I only had him that far back because he was hurt all the time at Iowa. But yeah, I just don't think these guys are that. Like, you for to have a Kelce or Kittle, you need a guy who's like 6'5", 260 or so, and runs in the low 4.5s roughly. Hockenson was really great
like
with the jumps.
OJ Howard,
right? OJ Howard is far better than these guys in my opinion. And again, I think Hockenson will be at least a Pro Bowler several times and an All Pro definitely within his reach. I'm less high on Fant. That's one I would be sickened by if they take Fant at 12.
I would be shocked. I don't see that happening. Another kind of interesting turn, kind of more just like a coming home in your mock here, because you were one of the original, like, Marquise Brown is really good, I don't care that he's small type of guys. And then when the foot injury occurs and he's not able to test, you know, you understandably were a little bit more cautious with where you were ranking him. Now, as the week of the draft is here, you have him going inside the top 20.
Yeah, I had him 19 to Tennessee. Maybe that's not good thinking on my part, because a three receiver set of Brown, Humphreys, and Corey Davis, that's still two out of three who pretty much can't block, or you can't expect much blocking out of anyway. But Humphreys is not going to have any downfield presence. He generally won't have a presence beyond like 7 yards in any given play. Corey Davis, I still think, will be very good, or maybe he needs to be in a different offense to be as good as he can be. I don't know, but I think he's really good, but there is no downfield element if Taywan Taylor is not the downfield element, and I'm still suspicious of that whole thing. I think Taywan Taylor is probably good. Even
I don't trust Tennessee to get the most out of him, though.
I don't trust Vrabel to do anything, right? Like, I don't think he's a very smart person. Like, he's gutsy and, like, wily, but I think he's basically a blockhead, and I don't know.
But, like, he played defense, but he also, like, caught touchdowns occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, that whole part of his, like, player memory kind of is, like, a loosely decent analog for him as a coach, because it's, like, he is the coach who's just like beating his head against a brick wall in the one sense, but on the other sense, he's like, let's party, fat guy touchdown coming up, like Kevin Bayard, you throw that 30 yards, whatever, I don't care, like just stuff like that. Like, he's bold and he doesn't care about convention necessarily, but I think, to be fair to him, he is aware that like sometimes numbers have like magical powers and you have to sometimes listen to the analytics guys in case that their alchemy is working particularly well today. But I don't know if he actually like trusts it, and he probably looks at it the way someone would like magic or something. Like, he's just like, well, you, really you know, keep it in the basement, but you know, let me know if you make something cool down there. Like, so I can imagine him kind of having various, you know, ostensibly analytically based conclusions of various sorts, but I don't know if he's ever gonna get like the whole picture put together at the same time. I think he's gonna be the kind of guy who like discovers something, learns something, but then like a little too slow, and like something else is happening over here and he's like, aha, and then you know the new thing's happening and he's already trying to catch up to that. I don't know. But Taywan Taylor not succeeding there is very strange to me, because he still has been pretty good on like a per snap per target basis. It's just like, it just keeps coming out that they don't like him for some reason. And Tajay Sharp, who is a backup, always plays ahead of him. And they also were talking about having Taywan specifically in the slot. It's like, I don't even think he's a slot guy. He's like an outside guy to me. He's a field stretching receiver. Or at least if you're having him in the slot, don't just like reduce him to running dregs and slants or whatever Tajay Sharp is marginally good at. So I don't know. I feel like they're not really on to the scent. I think they're going to like make a lot of efforts to improve that team. And I think that the defense has basically no needs. Like they could have, you know, it'd be nice to have another Jarrell Casey on the defense, but they could use maybe another edge rusher. But it's like they got Landry coming up. They got inside linebackers. Certainly the secondary is pretty well staffed. So if they don't have an offensive lineman to sign, and I guess like Didn't Saffold go there? Saffold?
I'm not sure entirely.
In any case, I don't think they have that many ways they can go, and receiver is one of the few that I can imagine. Like, if they've decided they don't like Taywan Taylor, then they might want Marquise Brown because they know Adam Humphries is playing in the slot. So it's got to be a downfield guy. My actually unironic prediction for the 19th pick is it will either be Marquise Brown or it could be Hakeem Butler. Those are the two. I'm not considering anything else.
All right. I love that because, the Titans were another tough nut to crack. I had them going with N'Keal Harry, but as time has progressed, I think that I see N'Keal Harry going like maybe inside the top 40, like somewhere between 30 and 40 or maybe 29 or formerly 29 would have made some sense.
Yeah, that Frank Clark trade was bad news for Harry and or some receiver anyway.
Yes. So, yeah, I think the Brown or Butler, you know, it's sort of a dealer's choice. Like, do you want the small, fast, explosive guy or do you want this guy with sort of just untapped potential, but nobody in like the history of the NFL has looked like this guy.
And Butler would make a ton of sense because he would be easier for the blocking, and they do intend to run as like the heavy foundation of that offense. So Butler would make a lot of sense. I only went with Brown because it seems like the consensus draft, like reporter media, has singled him out as like a top 20 possibility, whereas Butler, it's more like just the fantasy community is high on him.
It seems like in terms of like the actual people with NFL intel have not been banging the Hakeem Butler first round gavel.
It's like he's got his fans, but they're not all teams. Whereas with Brown, it's like it seems like everybody agrees, like, he's awfully fast. We would like to have someone that fast.
Sure is. Let's see. One more receiver that you got to, you got a couple more. Indianapolis, you had addressing that position as well.
Yeah, that was Paris Campbell that I went with, and I know he's got his critics. I think they're basically falling for a false premise, the idea that because he didn't run downfield routes or because his average depth of target was anything in particular at Ohio State, it means that he cannot do whatever.
4-3-1 means that he definitely can't get downfield.
Right. And the thing is, when you watch him, it's pretty clearly not a case where he's just like catching shovel passes. I mean, he does do that, but it's not because he can't catch other passes. It's like when he's in positions where he needs to make acrobatic catches on the run, he does it totally naturally. Like he doesn't have to like gather himself to do wide receiver things. He doesn't have to stop and, you know, stutter his feet to go into the next phase of his routes. They just looked at how easy it was to toss him the ball on a short route and watch him run 80 yards for a touchdown and thought, why not do it again? Why not make it as simple as possible? And it basically worked every time they needed it to. So I don't know. It would be one thing if we didn't have the clips of him making the acrobatic catches, but because they weren't far downfield when he did it. Like, watch some of his, even like his underneath catches that he makes. It's like he looks like an utterly natural pass catcher and runner after the catch. It's just like when you put him in a different looking offense, he'll start doing things differently.
Devin Smith only caught passes 30 yards down the field. Look at him.
Yeah, I still have some amount of truth or belief that if he hadn't ripped up his knee a bunch of times, he would have at least done something. I don't know. But yeah, I think it's one of those things where McLaurin and Dixon were doing a lot of the outside downfield things, and then Campbell would just kind of run lazy drag routes looking for where the zone was soft, and then he sits there and catches the ball and runs too fast for anyone to catch him. But in any case, I like that he's done that much, at least, because in Indianapolis, he would probably have a similar function. It's Devin Funchess and T.Y. Hilton who would be running downfield, even Eric Ebron further downfield. And I think the rest of the game will develop for Campbell if he doesn't have it right now. And I don't even want to concede that he doesn't have it right now. I think there's a possibility that if you just put him in some other offense in the NFL, day one, he can do everything. There's a possibility that that's the case. I don't know that it's the case, but there's no more evidence to the contrary, in my opinion. And in any case, in Indianapolis, he can just keep doing what he's already done so well. It would be like the underneath part of the field, the intermediate, while Hilton and Funchess are pulling the safeties and outside corners.
Is he from there, too? Or is that McLaurin that's from Indianapolis? One of those two is.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think McLaurin, my bad. But
oh no, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I think he would make a lot of sense there. And I mean, in that dome, he looks so fast. I think he would make a lot of sense for Indianapolis.
I really like that call. I had Jerry Tillery going there to 26, but I think Indianapolis will either get a fast receiver like him or they will go interior defensive line, because now finally, imagine just like the endless possibilities they have now that their offensive line it not only doesn't suck, but is actually really good.
Yeah, and that defense was really good last year in the regular season at least, but they definitely overachieved, and I think they know that. And Matt Eberflus did an amazing job, but we saw it immediately against the Chiefs when they just started spreading them out, and it's like, yeah, that Tampa 2 thing isn't going to work, man. It's like, you don't have Derek Brooks. I mean, Darius Leonard is, of course, great, but it's like, you need Warren Sapp and Simeon Rice and Derek Brooks to make that Tampa 2 thing work, and it's not 1999 anymore.
Unfortunately, that is the case. Any other guys that you wanted to talk about specifically from your first round mock, and then we'll just kind of end with a couple guys that we're going to see go on day two that you think are going to be some of your favorite type of fantasy type of impact guys?
Yeah, I had the tight ends from Iowa falling probably too far, but I had Fant go 30 and Hockenson go 32. I don't think... I feel like it would at least be unprecedented if either of them went in the top 15. Like, I know it might be a possibility because unprecedented things can happen in any draft. We don't have precedent until we do, and that could be a case of that here. But Fant does not play as fast and as athletically in the functional sense as his workout metrics lead people to believe. And I think people look at the touchdown percentage on his reception rate and they look at those athletic metrics and they think like, oh, this is just like, this is going to be unstoppable in the NFL. And it's not true. Like, we've got all a long history of hyper athletic tight ends who didn't do anything. Guys who were even just as productive in college as Fant was, guys that were not the second best tight end on their own teams. So I think that it's bad that Hockenson outproduced him. I think Hockenson is very good. And I know you can rationalize it. Like, what's wrong with getting outproduced by a player that you just said is really good? One of them is being, or if one of them was being projected in the first and the other in like the late second, then I would be able to get on board with that because I still consider the other guy better. You know, like,
yeah,
I don't really understand why people don't look at more tape of Fant, at least in the attempt to explain how he wasn't as productive as Hockenson. It's like, doesn't that confuse you a little if you believe that he's better and he wasn't better? What are you missing? And when you turn on the tape with Fant, he doesn't look that fast in that first like 10 yards of the field. Maybe you can bring out the best of him by just having him play receiver or something like that. And he looks faster when he gets to like the open field and he kind of knows what he needs to do and where he needs to go. But Hockenson always does. And when you look at Fant, by contrast, he seems kind of borderline sluggish off the snap. And in that first like 5 yards, if the more congested the field is, the slower he looks. And I think that could be an issue. It would at least be, I think, something that stunts his development relative to the assumptions that people are making about it. Like, it reminds me totally of an Eric, and people keep comparing him in a favorable sense to Eric Ebron. It's like, Ebron was the exact same player last year that he was in Detroit. That's not good.
This time last year, like, everyone hated Eric Ebron. They're like, wow, what a washout in Detroit.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we know even some of the best tight ends take a few years. If you're raw as a tight end, as a prospect, that's categorically not good because it's like, what, do we need to think 5 years of development time now? Look at Jared Cook. That's precisely what happened. Look at Eric Ebron. That's precisely what happened. And he still wasn't actually good last year. Jack Doyle just got hurt. So I think for people to compare Fant to Ebron, I think shows that they've completely lost track of the bigger picture. Like, that's not a good thing to be like Eric Ebron, at least not with the expectations that we're putting on Fant.
No, I think that's a really interesting way of putting that, where it's ignoring the trajectory to how Ebron got to double digit touchdowns.
Yeah. And Jared Cook needed to be on what, his third team before people stopped hating him. So And people are going to put the workout numbers. It's like, look, he's no Vernon Davis. And look, Jared Cook was as good of an athlete as Fant is. And it's just, there's not much you could objectively say that Fant grades better at than Cook ever did, or Ebron. Same thing.
There we go. Let's see. All right. So
second day stuff. All
second
right.
day. You know, we'll go through this quickly. Where do you see the first running back going off the board, and who's it going to be?
I'm going to stick to the line that I've been going with. This is basically a mantra that I tell myself at this point to keep away the Josh Jacobs demons that are saying like, a 4.66 is good, actually. He's the most talented running back since whatever. And I'm trying to ignore them. Daryl Henderson will be the first running back. The world needs some order. Something needs to make sense in this world. And Josh Jacobs being the first running back picked over Daryl Henderson, or even Damian Harris. Like, why would you take Josh Jacobs ahead of Damian Harris other than just because you're feeling like getting wild or something? I don't get it. But Daryl Henderson will be my first running back pick. I don't believe a running back will go in the first round.
I think maybe it slides all the way to 45 where Atlanta is before we see a running back go off the board.
It's not a good class. Don't need to go taking a running back in this particular draft. It's just not that. Like, if you are cornered into needing a running back in this draft, maybe pray instead. I don't know, but it's just not a good market to need a running back in if you're chasing a running back. And I think Henderson, like we were mentioning in a previous podcast, if he had run like a 4.35 or a 4.4 flat, then he's like a top 20 pick. So that he ran a 4.49 or whatever doesn't really push me off. I feel like he would be a totally okay pick at like 32, 35, whatever, but I agree that it's going to be tough because I don't think Tampa Bay is going to bail on Ronald Jones, and I still think Ronald Jones should turn into a decent player. Dirk Cutter doesn't know what he's doing.
Maybe Oakland at 35 would make
Oakland
sense,
is though. A good bet. They have so many picks, and they might try to trade one of those late first rounders for like a first rounder next year and a second rounder this year, something like that. Don't know if there'll be a market for it. But they have four picks in like a 9 or 11 pick stretch there. Yeah, I think
pick 24, pick 27.
Oh, sorry, three picks in an 11
and
pick span.
Pick 35.
So yeah, they'll have, like, I had them taking a corner and a safety in the second part of the first round in addition to Quinnen Williams, and it's like, well, what do we even have a need for now? Running back? Sure. I don't know. Like, maybe they take Jacobs ahead of Henderson. Henderson does not project as a potential workhorse, and Jacobs, to be fair, has at least that kind of frame. So if that's what they're looking for, Henderson won't be it. But I still think he's easily the best running back in this draft.
I do too. I think we're in lockstep in at least the sense that neither are probably going in the first round.
Yeah, but I guess we could see a guy like Deebo Samuel go. Mel Kiper did the I wouldn't be surprised thing, so whatever, he probably would be surprised. He just wouldn't mind people remembering it differently if Deebo Samuel went in the first round. But that speaks to that there's some real traction there that he has. He could go, I guess, in the late first. I would guess he's more like the 40th, 42nd, something like that. But it seems like he won't make it out of the top 45.
Yeah, it does seem that way. I wonder if Baltimore, if they trade out of the 22 spot, which I apparently they're looking to do.
Okay.
I think that they would definitely try to get inside the top 40 with that pick, because remember, they traded their second last year to get back into the first.
Okay.
To get Lamar Jackson. So I think that they want to address receiver. I think Deebo Samuel fits with the Ravens really well, and the things that he can do.
Him and Harry, maybe?
I think I could see either of those two, but I think they want a bigger, or I mean, I know Deebo is not like a huge guy, but he's thickly built, and I think that he brings that physical nature I think they're looking for from the receiver position. So if Baltimore somehow maneuvers things around to maybe, you know, see what Tampa Bay wants at 39 for that pick, or Buffalo at 40, I could see that type of situation playing out where, and then Samuel would kind of fit in that range that you were mentioning.
Yeah, I feel like there should be a handful of teams that want him. And I know that the stock has fallen off for these three lately for some reason, but I'm confident enough that if their stock has lowered, that the NFL is wrong and they will end up being good despite the misevaluation. JJ Arcega-Whiteside, Emmanuel Hall, Andy Isabella. I still have them ahead of Deebo, even though it seems like Deebo has much more momentum than any of them. And so particularly Hall, I feel like it would be weird if he got out of the top 50, because it's like he was so, like, what did he do wrong? Like, what could he have possibly done differently to have higher stock than he does?
His teammate was Jamon Moore, so he must just be Jamon Moore.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, he was so much more productive. Like, he was productive at every point. I guess the durability is a fair concern. He didn't stay healthy for like any of those seasons. But God, he's good. And if they seriously pass on him, that would be weird to me.
I see him falling towards the bottom of the second round. I don't see him getting past it, but like, I think Kansas City at 61 would be awesome.
They would be exceedingly lucky if that happened. I kind of hope it does, because it's like, I have enough Damian Williams shares in best ball now that it's like I'm starting to get nervous about the whole offense. And it's like, give me some receivers, please. Like, don't put DeMarcus Robinson sucks. Do not put him out there, please. I am begging you. No, don't do that. It won't work. But yeah, so I agree with you. Like, Hall is probably late second at best. It looks like Isabella is kind of going into that range. Arcega Whiteside could go like third, fourth round, which I think
is, that's going to be crazy when he's as good as we know he's going to be.
Yeah, I think that will age very poorly for the teams that pass over him. And Miles Boykin and Mecole Hardman, I think, could get involved in like the late second round. I think Hardman does not get past the third. I know a lot of people think he's like a fifth rounder. I think he will be one of the best picks in this class wherever he goes.
I softened my stance on Boykin in the sense that I thought he was more of like a workout warrior that way outperformed anything that he ever put on film. He didn't look like the greatest athlete again on film, but
right.
the polish to his game was a lot better than I was expecting. His ability to kind of use his body, his big frame,
yeah,
to
it's
like
pretty
shield corners and safeties on both in breaking and out breaking routes, I thought was pretty interesting. You can obviously crush it on the jump ball type of thing. And again, you know, when you're basically like a 99th percentile athlete and everything that you do at like 6'4", almost 220 pounds, and the film again, better than I thought it was. So I'm in on Boykin being a potential top 50. I understand it now.
Yeah, I actually have Boykin ranked ahead of Hakeem Butler, who I'm a bit contrarian on relative to the field. But yeah, I have Hardman, Boykin, and Butler in the same tier for dynasty purposes. And as much as I think Butler will be the first one picked out of those three, I still think Hardman could surprise people with, and not even just like surprised by going in the third. I wouldn't be shocked if Hardman goes like top 50 or something, because he's so fast.
The people that know, they know, and that they know that he's a top 50 talent.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument to make for putting him ahead of Isabella even, or somebody. Like, the production, of course, is not even close, but it's like, Mecole's been playing receiver for like a year and a half, and he's
number one athlete in his class.
Yeah, he didn't play receiver in high school. He was like an option quarterback in high school. Mm-hmm. So he's just, he's already pretty good, and he's had no time to prepare for the task, and he's got all the tools. Hard worker. He seems football obsessed. So I think NFL teams will love him. And I want to formally predict he will be a top 75 pick. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's a top 50.
I like it. I think that's definitely, I think we're in an agreement there. Where do you think Isabella is going? Because he is someone his stock has had a wild ride from dating back to, you know, the end of the season where the people that are just kind of into college football, they're like, this guy put up, you know, a zillion yards and a zillion touchdowns over these last couple of years. Like, you guys are sleeping on him. And then he crushes it at the Senior Bowl. And then everyone's kind of gets over their skis. And then he has an amazing combine. And it's like, oh my God, this is just like almost out of control now. Is he going to go in the first round or something? And, you know, basically since mid-March up through now, all quiet. I don't know. I don't know where to predict where he's going to go.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe the Chiefs have two late second round picks.
Yep, 61 and 63.
I could see Dallas taking him at 58. Maybe even like the Eagles or Patriots at 56, 57. I don't think he'll fall out of the second. That feels a little too extreme to me, because this is a guy who ran a 4.31 and was just, he couldn't have been more productive, really.
Nope.
Even in his not dominant years, like preceding this one, Adam Brenneman was a tight end who was getting a lot of targets in that offense. And he was a former 5-star recruit who would have been like a second, third round pick if he didn't have a career ending knee injury. So I think Isabella he's got his limitations, of course, but his strengths are going to play. Like, there's, his limitations don't negate what he's great at. It just limits, you know, the level of, or the number of
frequency with which he can take a,
yeah, it's like you can't request everything from him, but the things that you can bank on, and like those are things that every offense wants, that kind of speed, that kind of downfield threat, the after the catch ability. I would be shocked. The only thing that is a concern with him is basically the release and the catch radius. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if it's short routes, you're expecting him to do things after the catch, which he has the athleticism for that to translate. And if you're throwing to him downfield, will you just we already know the deal. Like, either he's open or he's not big enough to do a jump ball kind of thing. And so, but he gets open all the time. So I think he's going to be totally good. I think if he does slide, it's basically because we're kind of like desensitized to how good he is, because we've had so much time to overanalyze a really good, really deep receiver class that we're kind of like rationalizing ranking whatever guy this high by kind of convincing ourselves that the other one isn't that good or something like that. I think it would age poorly if he falls out of the second.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's definitely like that top 65 type of talent.
I think it's Arcega that would slide, and maybe Hall because of the durability or something, and they might be like, oh, he's a track guy, because he actually was a track guy.
Do you have a day three receiver that, you know, like say that Arcega Whiteside and Hall both hear their names called by the end of Friday night, receiver on day three that you see making an impact?
Well, we talked a little bit lately about Dylan Mitchell at Oregon, and I think he's really good. I ranked him at 35, and the only reason I have him that low in my dynasty rankings is because it seems like the same people who hate Ed Oliver and love Daniel Jones might also hate Dylan Mitchell. And so, I mean, we saw not to compare them in any particular way as players, but Kenny Stills, this gets lost in people's memories a little bit. Kenny Stills only fell to the fifth round of his draft, and he was only given this lukewarm reception by the NFL since then because of who he is. Like, there is like just concern over his attitude, and he's like a very like free spirit kind of person who just doesn't care about, you know, jock culture, really, and they penalized him for that. He was a guy who put up huge numbers at Oklahoma as a possession receiver, by the way, and that he's been rebranded in the NFL as just like a downfield specialist is a joke. He's a total receiver. He's a complete receiver, but he ran like a 4.37. He was a 5-star recruit, and then he falls to the fifth round, and then with the Saints, he's doing 10 yards a target, and then he's still pretty good even when they trade him to the cursed Dolphins. I think that's the kind of thing that Mitchell is up against. Like, I think if he does end up on the field somewhere, his talent will speak for itself. But he's got to worry about these just goofy old cranks, like looking at him funny, basically.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I went back and looked, and I liked him during the season, or like coming into the year when, you know, it was sort of wide open as to who the wide receiver one's going to be outside of like the Ole Miss guys and N'Keal Harry, like, you know, who's sort of next. I thought Mitchell was someone that I kind of identified as being, you know, the number one target for a guy like Justin Herbert. I thought it was going to be great, and it turned out to be pretty awesome. I mean, he was a 32% target share, so he was the main target.
He's very young still.
Yep, and everyone knew the ball was going his way, and he still caught it. He's still, you know, not over 9 yards a target, over 1,000 yards on the year, 9 touchdowns on 120 targets. Not like the greatest catch rate, but he's getting downfield a lot. Just really finds has a natural ease to get open in find the soft spot in zones. If you watch his film against Stanford from this past year, really good play speed, really good routes.
He tested totally good in athletic testing. Catch
too. So I like Mitchell a lot as my day three guy that's going to make a lot more noise than people would expect.
Yeah, I think he could be a Tyler Boyd kind of receiver if he ever gets the shot quickly. And I actually have these two guys ranked ahead of him, but I think they're day three most likely picks. I'm also very high on Gary Jennings at West Virginia. I feel like he's maybe the most underrated receiver in this class that has a few guys who are underrated. I think he's a totally good receiver who can make it like an, I think he can immediately earn snaps in the NFL, and it wouldn't be shocking to me if they actually do like him. I just haven't read anything indicating that. The other one is Jalen Hurd from Baylor. He's a weird one, but yeah, former 5-star recruit at running back for some reason, even though he was 6'5", and had really good production last year, and like the Baylor offense basically reconstructed itself to accommodate him, even though they had a few other good receivers by the time he got there, guys who had been there for years, and that was just him showing up, became their number one receiver. So he's like a 6'5", 230 kind of guy who has had health issues. He hasn't been able to run, I don't think, but if he were to run, he's supposedly like a 4.45, 4.5 kind of guy. So he might be kind of like your dollar store Miles Boykin kind of pick or something.
Yeah, he's got a unique background. So interesting player, to say the least. Any other parting shots before we wrap things up?
No, I can't wait for it to be over. Day three of the draft is the worst day of the year for us. Yep. Just absolute torture. I'm going to hate it.
Just sweating and looking up Eastern Michigan guards. No disrespect to Eastern Michigan.
I'm gonna. It's worse than the last one. I don't know why, but it's just the indignity of it all is just more unbearable every time. And I'm gonna be just like a pouty little bitch for like, I don't know, 6 months at least afterward.
The crisis mode I get into when we fall behind by like one or two picks is just, oh my God.
Yeah, it's just full blown panic attack. I'm just like,
which one?
John, Google.
It's google.com,
John. Yeah.
It's bad. I started using Ask Jeeves to find things.
Yeah, it's like typing in Lycos, and it's like, that domain isn't valid anymore, and you're just like sweating, turning red.
Give me the Netscape, boys.
Yeah, so that's I don't know. I guess the point is everybody should feel sorry for us.
They should, yeah. We have to write about sports on a Saturday. It's just the absolute worst. But that's going to wrap things up for today's show, and we'll be back. I guess we'll do a, you know, sort of post-draft debrief podcast next week.
We'll sort through the ruins.
We shall, and find the gems. So that's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.